So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
Matches and everything he could to get back to the Royal Rumble. Who's number 30? After being prohibited from being in it. What? Wait a minute. What the hell? What is this? It's John Cena. John Cena.
Oh my gosh.
Number 30.
This is unbelievable.
You gotta be kidding me.
Oh my God.
His expression told the entire story. The Rock is exploding off of Barrett's springboard. John Cena, the 30th entrant in the Royal Rumble match. And yes, indeed, this has just picked up.
Welcome to Review Away, John Pollock, Wei Ting with you for another week, another review, another 3 hours of our week dedicated to watching pro wrestling, and now we're going to spend more hours dissecting those hours of watching it.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I am.
Wei, you are just a bundle of energy
Let's
today.
Let's fucking do this.
2008, Wei.
Uh-huh.
What a year.
What a year. I know.
Who would have thought that we'd be talking about John Cena winning a Royal Rumble this week?
I probably would have guessed it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Ting, you were our Royal Rumble pool winner internally.
Yeah. We did an internal pool at the Royal, at the Law. And yes, I won. I'm so happy about it.
And what's interesting, Wei, is that you didn't even pick the winner, but it was the prop bet, so to speak, that really... boosted it for you. Ryback really coming through for you in a number of categories.
Yes, I really like the way the categories that Jason Agnew devised for this internal law pool. The categories were, first of all, you get 7 points if you pick the winner. 7 points if you pick a surprise entrant. So those are the two biggest categories. But you get 6 points for each category with the first entrant, not including Dolph Ziggler, of course, but... Second last remaining person, and most eliminations.
And Ryback was last in.
Mm-hmm.
He was the last eliminated.
Yeah.
Most eliminations right there. That's 21 points.
There you go. So, yes, thank you, Ryback. My new favorite wrestler.
Ryback. He made a huge comeback in Wei Ting's playbook
on Sunday night. Honestly.
He has drawn money for you.
He really has. So, because, you know, it was looking pretty bleak there. I had also had, like, you know, Kane, who didn't really do much. I had Titus O'Neil, which
did nothing.
Was slim pickings by that point. But then Ryback showed up at the very end, basically won me the pool. So
I will say most impressive pick out of all of us was our friend Justin Terry from Review America fame.
Yep.
Picking Gold Dust as a surprise entrant, and that one came through.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I can't believe he picked him. For someone that doesn't even really follow that well, to just pick Gold Dust, who picked him and followed it up with, is he still with WWE? And we informed him, no, but your pick is final, and Goldust comes out.
Well, maybe he's fucking with us. Maybe he actually has a source on the inside.
He could have. Maybe he has a direct pipeline to the WWE.
Maybe Linda. You know, I know, you know, he must have conservative friends working at Sun News Network.
Yes. So anyway, Wei, 2008 Royal Rumble. This was, we teased this a few weeks ago before... dangling it in front of people and then taking it away. No, we are not going to review this. And a few people were upset. So we decided last week, well, let's go back and we will review the 2008 Royal Rumble. Our final Royal Rumble review of this Rumble season.
That's right. We take away and we give back. That's what we like to do.
So I guess we're going to just jump into this review right now. Madison Square Garden, New York City, actually took place on the exact same date as this year's Rumble, January the 27th.
That's exactly it.
What a stat.
Huh. How does that work?
Well, the 27th falls on Sunday a couple times.
But it's been 5 years.
It's been, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, usually it's every 6 years a date repeats on the day of the week. But you're also, I don't know, leap years screwed up. Someone will scientifically explain this and how the sun turns.
The fact-checking thread will explain this for us.
We need a science thread in there, too.
Ooh.
Yeah, that'd be
math thread would help.
Did you watch this initially way live?
I believe I watched it with you guys.
I think so. I'm pretty sure you would have been call screening.
I was call screening at the time, but I have no recollection of it aside from the Rumble final entry.
Do you remember Dave Meltzer's appearance that night on The Law?
Nope, not at all.
Well, coming up later on in today's show, we're going to hear from Dave Meltzer from that very night. Some firsthand reaction from that very night as Dave Meltzer is going to chat about the Rumble. And what was interesting was I went back to The Law from that night. It was the weekend before Brock Lesnar's UFC debut against Frank Mir.
Wow.
Yes.
It just seemed like yesterday.
No. It seemed like a long yesterday ago.
I guess so.
A lot has happened since that time, of early 2008. So the show started, and it was they did a huge, big production commercial for the Royal Rumble this year on a New York subway train, featuring all of the wrestlers on this subway train. And the opening video featured this subway train with the wrestlers, and then it went through a montage of all the Royal Rumble logos over the years. And dating back to the first one, we had sound-ups with Gorilla Monsoon, Tony Schiavone, Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, and lots of highlights from past Royal Rumbles, some of the key winners, not all of the winners shown. And it ended with Hunter throwing a sledgehammer into glass. And this made me think of Bill Goldberg putting his arm through glass.
Hmm.
I don't know why. Hunter, the smarter worker, using a sledgehammer to break the glass instead of his forearm.
I really like this commercial. And
it's great.
I don't know why they don't try to do more of these. I mean, you remember
expensive.
I guess so. But you remember that 1 year with the West Side Story
deal
that they did for the Rumble? I thought that was excellent. And so I wish they would, you know, maybe spend a bit more money. But maybe, you know, with the way people turn these days and how quickly decisions are made, maybe it's not, you know, the best way to be able to do these in advance.
By the way, I forgot to mention this on The Law this past Sunday, but during the Royal Rumble stat video, one of the stats they pull out is that the number 30 number has yielded the same amount of winners as number one,
mm-hmm.
with one person winning number one, one person winning number 30. And of course, we know actually two people who drew number one have won the Rumble. Of course, we have Shawn Michaels, and then we have Chris Benoit. However, on the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, when they interviewed Dolph Ziggler, he said only two people have ever won from number one. Mm. So there you go. A subtle reminder
now,
to people.
On this pay-per-view, the 2008 Rumble, in that By the Numbers video, didn't they mention that two people had won who had been number one?
Oh, you know, I can't remember.
I think they did. Because specifically in this video, they said more people have actually won as a number one entrant than number 30.
Oh, well, there you go. So they did. I think it's one of the dumbest things that people bring up. Like, who cares? Who cares if they bring Chris Benoit up or not? In something so trivial as this, where, like, you're not even saying his name. You're just referencing it.
Yeah, as long as you don't mention the name. But would you go as far as to say, you know, show Chris Benoit when you bring up this stat?
Me personally, I don't think I wouldn't put it in there.
Yeah,
that's a downer to me. I don't want to see Chris Benoit on a pay-per-view in a glorified remembrance.
And that's the line of thinking that I think that they're portraying.
It bothers me, though, when they just say one person has won. It's like, it's a statistic, and I don't think you should be crucified for giving a statistic. You're not glorifying somebody.
Yeah.
You're just listing a stat. So I really don't care whichever way they go. I think they're perfectly right to if they want to never say his name or show him again.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if they're putting out an anthology, I wouldn't expect them to spend all this money to edit him off of DVDs and change commentary around. It's that shouldn't be on them to have to go change all that.
How have they treated that in the sense?
They put out some anthology, maybe a SummerSlam one, I want to say, or something, and they left him in.
Right.
And I didn't have any issue with that.
And of course, in like the encyclopedia, there's a whole half page dedicated to Chris Benoit.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, me too.
So, anyway. This was actually the first Rumble after the murder-suicide. So we go on. Jeez, talk about a downer we started this off on.
Mm-hmm.
On to the Royal Rumble. First, happier times.
First in HD.
Wow. Very nice way.
Yeah.
The very first pay-per-view from the WWE in high definition. Mm-hmm. I had that noted in this.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah.
How did you know that? Did it say on?
They said.
They said that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear them say that. Yeah. I remembered this. I was instantly upset when I realized who the SmackDown announce team was at this time. Do not remember this unit together. Michael Cole and Jonathan Coachman.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah. Well, ugh. You know what? I mean, Michael Cole was fine, I thought. But it's Jonathan Coachman who, you know, wasn't...
I always found Coachman to be so... bland.
Yep.
It was like, I've got the same person talking twice.
Yeah.
I only need one of you.
Not only that, I mean, he didn't really offer anything in character, in ability to analyze wrestling. You know, Taz, at least, even though he wasn't a heel commentator, was able to break down some of the technical wrestling quite well. But,
well, this was also at the time, this was their first pay-per-view, and they showed this in the highlights. The prior pay-per-view, Armageddon, was where JBL did a run-in and then announced he was returning to the ring.
Right.
So JBL had left the commentary table. So even more pronounced here, because JBL was just awesome in mm-hmm. 2007 and 2006 on commentary. And in to fill the shoes of JBL was the coach. And these were the two to call what could theoretically have been Ric Flair's last match ever and would be his last match in Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Cole and Jonathan Coachman calling this one. Ric Flair against MVP. And Flair comes out first. He gets on the microphone, talks about what an honor it has been to wrestle in Madison Square Garden all these years. Says his first match here was in March of 1976 and thanks him for the respect he is receiving and gets cut off by MVP's theme music. And he comes out and he was the United States champion at the time. And I am pretty sure that Justin Roberts introduced him as MVT.
MVT. Most valuable teammate.
Most valuable teammate.
Yeah. How believable was it that Flair would not lose here? Did anybody...
I don't think anyone thought he was losing to MVP here.
Right.
I was fairly certain on that one. Though at the time, you know, people were saying, well, this storyline with Flair, he should lose to a young guy. Mm-hmm. And MVP and Kennedy were two of the leading candidates at this time. And, well, now they're... you look now, way 5 years, and Ric Flair is probably the most connected to the WWE now of these three.
Yeah, absolutely.
Potential candidates. Mm-hmm. So... comes out, Charles Robinson was the official, which was a nice added touch, I thought. It could at least, you know, tip off. Maybe this will be Flair's last match. Charles, Little Nate is there in the ring.
Mm. It could have just been a random draw. I don't know.
It could have been. Maybe they didn't know the history.
Yeah, I don't think they did.
MVP slaps Flair's face, and he responds with chops. MVP with a mafia kick, and Flair hits an elbow, attacks the left knee of MVP, who blocks, I'm going to say MVT, blocks the figure four. Flair takes his back body drop and a running boot is delivered to Flair into the corner. Robinson counts three during this pin attempt, but Flair gets his foot on the rope and it's only a near fall. And MVP freaks out here thinking that he had pinned Flair. MVP hits a series of slaps. Flair fights off to get off of his shoulders and then Flair counters the playmaker by MVP, applies the figure four, and MVP taps out. 7 minutes and 50 seconds.
Maybe that's what the T stands for.
Tap out. Most valuable tap.
Yeah. I really like this gimmick. It's, you know, for basically a farewell tour for this man, I thought this gimmick was really great. And I was very impressed with Flair's physicality at this point in his career, especially compared to today.
Yeah, yeah,
especially
absolutely.
Today. I mean literally today.
Well, he's... He's still jet flying.
Yeah, he is.
Blood clotting son of a gun. Anyway, Flair gets a standing ovation after the match, where Cole calls him the world's most famous sports entertainer. This makes me cringe when I... The world's most famous sports entertainer.
Yeah.
I hate that goddamn term. How many decades have they been pushing that? And has it resonated with anyone? Can you even imagine someone saying, hey, I got sports entertainment tickets. You want to go?
That I can't imagine, no.
Like, it's one of the biggest failed marketing attempts, I think, in the history of sports or entertainment.
Okay.
Like, WWE Universe has caught on more significantly than sports entertainment has. People actually do say WWE Universe in their everyday speak.
Okay, I don't know if they mind so much that the fans use the term wrestling, but I think sports entertainment is just a term for them to use to grab hold of the people that aren't wrestling fans. Like, I mean, you know,
like, I don't think anyone, your parents, advertisers, parents. I don't think anyone calls it that ever.
Oh,
I think it is always going to be pro wrestling.
It is silly. It's a way to make something. It's like calling strippers exotic dancers. Is that, you know, does it somehow make them more classy?
It reminded me of this past Saturday when we had the UFC on Fox show and they were promoting Demetrius Johnson and John Dodson for the world championship.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was like, who are you really fooling here? Are there people that are going to tune in and then when the main event comes, be like, oh, they got me. It's flyweights. They tricked me.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, you and I are so deep in this bubble that, okay, obviously, you know, you're not going to be able to trick me. But, I mean, a casual viewer just flipping through when they see a world champion. But then again, is a casual viewer going to know what a flyweight is?
Maybe not. Anyway, that was my rant here on Michael Cole and his post-match title he gave Ric Flair. Vince McMahon is in the back with Hornswoggle, who had recently been revealed as his bastard son.
Yeah.
Was supposed to be Kennedy. Turned out not to be Kennedy. It was Hornswoggle.
Whoa, what's the story behind that? Was it always supposed to be Hornswoggle?
No, it was supposed to be Kennedy.
And then what happened?
Mr. Kennedy decided in the wake of the Chris Benoit story that he went out himself and contacted some news agencies and said, I want to defend this company, and went on his own volition to defend the WWE and their drug testing. And a couple months later, the Signature Pharmacy bust came, and guess whose name was on that list, making the company look rather stupid. And you know what? They basically said,
disowned him.
Fuck this guy. He is not going to be the world's most famous sports entertainer.
No.
He is going to be buried in the Rumble this year.
Yeah.
So there we go. And Hornswoggle will instead be Vince's bastard son. And this, they were calling him Hornswoggle by this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was Little Bastard for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
What a name. So anyway, Vince is in his office discussing the luck of the Irish, mentioning his grandfather and father and his own kids and their history at Madison Square Garden, calls Hornswoggle his only bastard son, who is in the Rumble tonight, and he expects Hornswoggle to win this match. And then Finlay walks in, and basically Finlay takes Hornswoggle away, and Vince basically browbeats Hornswoggle until Finlay shows up and then is being polite to Hornswoggle and just bullying his bastard child. And then Finlay comes in here to protect the little guy.
Yeah.
Who would later be revealed as the legitimate father of Hornswoggle.
Okay.
So it would have been...
Sounds thrilling.
Hornswoggle Finlay would have been his name, wouldn't it?
Right.
Or were we? Or the character was maybe... He was just Finlay. He didn't have a first name.
No, Dave.
They never called him Dave, did they?
No.
Well, Hornswoggle Finlay.
Okay.
Then we go to Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, who introduce an old friend of ours who worked in the XFL with us, and we throw to the first WWE appearance of Mike Adamly, who is positioned in the audience and talks about how he saw Flair's first match here in 1976, and then throws to a video package with Chris Jericho and JBL and their feud. A fine throw here in contrast.
This was fine, yes.
This was fine.
But,
Jesus. Had that fake laughter going, and
I just think from the get-go, such an awful fit for this company, for this type of thing. It just seemed like he was some guy who came from a real sports background. Is, I guess, as much as American Gladiators is a real sport.
Was a football player.
Yeah, but just seemed like a guy who can't find another job in real sports. Knew somebody in the back.
Tough to get a lot of meetings when you got XFL near the top of your resume above American Gladiators, right. I assume. So we got the video here with JBL and Jericho's feud. This was just a few months after Jericho had returned. This guy returns a lot.
He takes a
talk
lot of
about
risk.
Stuff on the Rumble that really parallels that. We're talking about Jericho's return, Cena winning the Rumble, and Flair fighting for his career.
Mm-hmm. JBL here as well.
Yep, JBL.
Both men making returns. Over
JBL
the past
on the announce booth. Anyway, the feud began at Armageddon when Orton was in the walls of Jericho. JBL, earlier in the match, Orton had tossed Jericho into JBL, and then Jericho shoved JBL off to get back into the ring, and it ended in a DQ with JBL attacking Jericho with a big boot. And then on television, JBL choking him with a rope, putting marks on his throat, and telling Chris Jericho, his kids, that your father is a coward. A lot of choking here with a rope that was, you know, I'm sure Daniel Bryan going back and watching this would have been like, what the fuck?
Hmm.
This was pre-PG. Just by a few months, they were able to sneak this angle in. This was a violent angle. They were trying to hang him.
In a very violent match.
Very violent match. Jericho and JBL grudge match began with a brawl. Jericho takes him down and is attacking him before heading to the floor. JBL wears him down with a choke and then sends him into the steel post where I don't know if this was hard way or Jericho just bladed here, but...
Oh, yeah, I think he bladed on the outside.
Yeah, big crimson mask here for Chris Jericho in New York.
I had not seen... I've never seen Jericho bleed this much.
For a second match in, yeah. I don't know if this was necessarily necessary. I know this was a big grudge match between the two, but this wasn't the end of the feud. And second match in, I just thought this was a little... overboard.
Well, considering the subject matter and the storyline and the finish, I mean, I didn't mind it.
Did you hear any of the Nigel McGuinness interview when we had him on? Because he was talking about in his document, like he's become now a big proponent on kind of getting rid of blood in pro wrestling. And what are your thoughts about that? Because I've always looked at blood as something that, you know, when not used gratuitously, can be a real great device.
Absolutely.
In a match.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like... Maybe that's me, like, not thinking with a fully formed view on this. For guys, like, I mean, like, who knows what diseases some of these guys might... Like, it's incredibly dangerous that you're bleeding here in front of a live audience.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, stuff can go wrong. You could bleed on somebody at ringside. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus, we watch that when Worlds Collide where people are wiping Perro Aguayo's forehead, which is cut open.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I know tons of people, Jesus Christ, John Pollock, stop hugging trees at this point. But, I mean, as pro wrestling evolves, I mean, could blood become something that's passé? I mean, there's a lot of arguments to make against it. Like, Bob Orton Jr., when he came back and then did a big blade job with Taker, and then they found out he had hepatitis, they dodged a massive bullet there.
Well, I mean...
pardon the pun there, Bullet Bob.
Wow. How...
I mistook people, Bullet Bob.
That's okay. But how often do they do these tests to test for hepatitis, to test for all these diseases?
Well, it's like WWE I would be the least concerned about, even Bob Orton Jr. withstanding, that I'm sure guys are getting a lot more tested. But how many indie shows have we gone to, you know there's nothing going on?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone. And I mean, you know, there's some pro wrestlers who don't live the cleanest of lifestyles that... You know, blood, it is something kind of nuts to be doing at that level, especially where there's no testing going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's what concerns me. On a big stage like this, I feel like, you know, the issues do come when it's used too often and too, I don't know, ineffectively. Like, I remember going back to Impact taping that I went to with Agnew a year or so ago, and... Like, Matt Morgan was just bleeding in some, you know, some second mid-card matchup that just we completely forgot about afterwards. It's just, okay, this guy's got blood on his forehead now. I think that's a waste. I think, you know, a gimmick like this should be saved. I like the way they do it now. Like, you know, last time we saw a lot of blood was in that Cena-Brock Lesnar match, and I thought that was incredibly effective.
Match continues here with Jericho bleeding. He fights back with a series of shoulder blocks, hits the lion salt, and then a clothesline sends both to the floor. They fight by the announce table, and Jericho grabs a chair and murders JBL in the head with a chair shot for the DQ at 9:20. He then throws the chair at JBL's arm, chokes him with a rope from the floor over the top rope, climbs onto the announce table as the crowd chants Y2J.
Yeah, this was a visual to, reference the choking that JBL did to Jericho earlier.
Yes, for revenge here. So the feud was going to continue. I wasn't blown away by this match, and kind of a shitty finish.
Well, on the surface, it seems to make no sense. Why is the babyface here going for the DQ? But I think it does make sense when you think about it, because, you know, here's a guy. This man insulted his family, insulted his children. What does he care about the outcome of a match? This guy just wants to beat the shit out of the other guy. And so I totally buy him just saying, fuck this match. I'm just going to attack him, and I'm just going to use my steel chair. Although it does kind of make Jericho look kind of like a coward who couldn't accomplish his goal.
This is a weird time because Jericho had just come back, and you always have that kind of, you know, big return. You've got a bit of, you know, momentum. But it was also like the babyface return character to me. It wasn't clicking to the most it could. And it wasn't until after WrestleMania when he made the heel turn and began the Shawn Michaels program. And then, I mean, that to me still to this day is the best Jericho run I've ever seen, was in 2008 and 2009.
Right.
His two best years.
Sure. And I think we're going to see something similar with Jericho right now and on this other return, where he's going to start out. Anytime he comes back, he's going to have that babyface reaction. Maybe ride that for a little bit and then turn on the crowd at some point.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask, where did they go with this feud afterwards? Because this couldn't have been the end.
No, it did continue for a bit after this, and then they kind of went their separate ways leading into WrestleMania. And JBL continued, like, you could tell in this match, like, JBL wasn't in great shape here. His back, he's always talked about this run, it was like, he wasn't great during this comeback. And I kind of, you know, the company just, I think, wanted another big heel to come back, but I don't think he was physically ready for this run, and I would have preferred just him stay on commentary at the time. So, I mean, but he worked for another year after this, and Jericho, of course, had a much better run. Anyway, match ends. In the back, Ashley Massaro knocks on the door of Maria. Ashley Massaro looked a little rough here.
In what way?
I don't know. I don't know if it was the combination of the makeup and, like, the lip rings.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. She kind of has that, I gotta watch my words here. But you know, like, I was gonna say, like, a yoga body. Not that that's bad, but I mean, like, I do yoga. I think yoga's great. But sometimes there are people that just, like, are so hardcore about it, or just so hardcore about working out in general, they just, like, I don't know. Maybe for a woman it just kind of stands out more, but they just look incredibly, maybe too defined. You know what I mean? Which is fine, I'd just say. I'm just saying, maybe not the look. Maybe maybe they necessarily want for diva.
Ladies, Wei Ting is available if you're interested. Digging yourself a deep hole here with the female listeners, the three of them out there that are downloading this podcast.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
that might be generous. Three. Anyway, Santino Marella answers the door, comes out, doesn't want Ashley to speak to Maria because of her body, and says, Maria cannot say no to anything or anyone. And Morella tells her that Maria is not interested in Ashley or her booby magazine, because Ashley, I guess, was sent here as the representative of Playboy to get Maria to pose for Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Ashley, maybe Ashley gets a back end of the sales for any future divas in Playboy magazine. WrestleMania 24 graphic. 63 days away, Mr. Ting.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can't wait.
The theme for this was Stand Up for Rock and Roll by Airborne.
Great.
Did you stand up?
No, I was sitting down the entire time.
It's like rock and roll was under attack here on the show, and WWE was standing up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to our next video here for Edge and Rey Mysterio, the world title program going on SmackDown. And Vicky had recently turned heel, joining Edge and bringing in the Edgeheads, Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins, which when they first shot that angle with the two dressed up as Edge, it was actually a hell of an angle because they looked identical to Edge in the way they shot it and had them dressed up and joined them as their group. Unfortunately, didn't quite get over as a group. And then Mysterio won a beat the clock challenge on SmackDown. Beat the clock challenge going into the Rumble.
Yeah.
Very creative.
Mm-hmm.
Edge comes out with Vicky, and Teddy Long is wheeling Vicky out. And they are alongside Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins. Zack Ryder, longer hair here.
Yeah, he was sporting his Edge head look. And I mean, did you have any opinions on the Edge heads at the time? And did you think, either one of them would be lasting or go on to success?
I mean, I watched them a bit when they were on ECW when they first debuted as the Major Brothers. But I can't say they really struck me as these can't-miss talents or anything like that. I was skeptical of this group because whenever you design a group like this, I mean, it can either be a huge benefit to all involved with everyone kind of rising up, kind of your evolution kind of prototype, or it can be like this, which is where a lot of these kind of groups kind of fail. And they just, unfortunately, when Hawkins and Ryder left, I mean, Ryder kind of helped himself. I don't think this group did anything for his career, yeah. Nor Hawkins. Mysterio came out wearing this weird helmet to the ring.
Yeah, some type of metal bondage mask.
Yeah, very strange. The crowd was much more pro-Edge and anti-Rey Mysterio here. The New York audience, they weren't crazy about Rey.
I don't know about that. I heard some Let's Go Rey chants.
Yeah, I think they were somewhat mixed.
Yeah.
The crowd was very hot, though, here. From the time the match began, Edge tossed Mysterio to the floor chest first, but he rolls as he goes and lands on his feet, turns around and runs into a baseball slide by Rey Mysterio, and Ryder and Hawkins go over to work over Mysterio, and then they get sent to the back by referee Mickey Henson. Edge gets laid on the ropes and goes to the floor to avoid the 619, but Mysterio hits a plancha to the floor. Edge then kicks the knee out from Mysterio as he's on the second rope and works over the left knee. Mysterio came back with a bulldog counter as he continues to sell the left knee and is limping. He hits a double stomp onto the chest, much better than Perro Aguayo's last week from the 94 Rumble. Hit a baseball slide into a single arm DDT and then ran into a big boot by Edge that I thought looked great. Ran right into this boot. Edge missed a spear into the corner. Mysterio hit a tilt-a-whirl head scissors into the 619 and then a splash off the top. But Vicky rises from her wheelchair to pull Mickey Henson out of the ring. Mysterio then dodges Edge. He lays down on the ropes. Vicky gets up on the apron and Rey hits a 619 to both of them. And then as he goes for a springboard, he springboards right into an Edge spear and Edge pins Mysterio clean. 12 minutes and 34 seconds. A little short, but these two just about always had great chemistry together.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good match with a fantastic finish. I thought everything going from the Vicky reveal where she's not really paralyzed or whatever, not supposed to be in her wheelchair, to the 619, like her standing in the way of Edge taking the 619 to that midair spear. I thought all that was done really well. And I thought the knee injury was sold very well, too, by Rey Mysterio, doing his entire comeback on his good leg. So I thought this was a very good match.
Flair walks into a locker room in the back, and Mr. Kennedy mocking... Sorry. Yeah, it was Mr. Kennedy at this point.
Yes.
I get confused with his misters. He mockingly applauds Flair and says when he wins the Rumble, he'll have a lot of time between now and WrestleMania, teasing a feud with Flair. But then Shawn Michaels walks in, tells Kennedy to continue on, but Kennedy just walks off and leaves. And Michaels sarcastically jokes about a trash-talking heel with platinum blonde hair and that gimmick will never work. And Flair wishes Michaels good luck in the Rumble. Batista walks in, and then Triple H walks in wearing this hideous, hideous T-shirt that was like copper and yellow and silver with like some skull crown shit. Some Triple H shirt that just looked terrible. Tells Flair to put his pants on because he's wearing a towel. Hunter says the best man will win tonight. Has a stare down with Batista. And Michael says the very best man will win and then works in a plug for his T-shirt on WWEshop.com. And Hunter says he hates shilling and gives the shirt to Ric Flair to put on his bare chest.
It's great WWE comedy.
Ha! Huh.
Yep.
This is hilarious.
Yes. Anderson, or Kennedy, I mean, you know, he essentially does the same type of delivery, same type of promo these days. But for some reason, I find him a little less annoying.
Well, he was over at this point, I think, still. I mean...
Yeah, but it's the same character. Why? What changed?
I don't know. Maybe he just wore on people.
Yeah, maybe.
We see a split screen of Orton and Hardy getting ready for their next match, which is for the WWE title. But first, Maria comes out and yells, "What's up, all you stars and studs in New York?"
Uh-huh.
Stars and studs.
Yep.
And she is here to host the very first Rumble Kiss Cam, which featured one interaction that I can't describe as anything short of sexual harassment.
Kind of was.
This one guy kissed the girl next to him. I can only hope it was his girlfriend.
No,
and
I guarantee you they didn't even know each other.
Grabbed her boob.
What?
Didn't you see this?
No.
There was one here where the guy just leans over and grabbed the girl's boob. And this was not even a chance that I'm wrong about this. Like, if you go back and watch this, he just grabbed her boob.
It's not the grope cam.
Well, this guy should have been arrested.
They just, at least for one of these couples, they seem to pick people that didn't even look like a couple. They just, it was a man and a woman standing next to each other. And this one girl, this blonde, was just like, no, like shaking her head. I don't want any part of this at all. And yet, you know.
This was uncomfortable.
It kind of was.
Guys, like, using tongue and stuff.
Imagine they put two siblings together. That'd
be
weird.
Did you happen to see Hulk Hogan's latest controversial tweet?
No.
He sent out a tweet that read, Brooks legs. And
you're paraphrasing here because you're looking for the tweet.
Well, that's what he wrote as the caption.
All right.
And VH1 has labeled him creepy as a result. But this was what he tweeted out.
All right, let's
and
see
it just read, Brooks legs. That's what Hogan tweeted.
He tweeted out a photo of his daughter's legs?
Yeah.
That is weird.
Hulk Hogan is a very proud parent, perhaps to a fault. There's no other way to explain why he posted a photo of his daughter Brooke in a short dress for everyone to ogle on Twitter. Well, okay, there is another reason to explain it, but it's far too unsettling to comprehend. Quote, Brooke's legs, he captioned the image, which is somehow more gross than his entire sex tape. Not surprisingly, the photo has already been taken down by lockers on the grounds of being incredibly creepy. But it's just the latest in a long line of uncomfortably close moments between the famous father and daughter. In fact, Brooke has had to defend her relationship with her father several times in the media over the past few years. Quote, I'm so sick of people saying me and my dad are in some perverted relationship, end quote, she wrote on Twitter back in August of 2011. Quote, go home and do your own thing. Stop picking on me, end quote. We're not picking on you, Brooke. We're just curious. Head down to the gallery below to relive some of our favorite cringeworthy moments between the pair. Oh, wow, they've got a gallery.
So this website had to ban this photo?
They say in quotations, we imagine.
Oh,
but
okay.
The photo was taken down.
Yeah, that's
but not enough
weird.
Before VH1.com got the photo.
Hmm. Well, he's very proud, obviously.
Of
what he produced.
Of what? Look how hot my daughter is.
Yeah.
That's disgusting, dude. I don't know. Hulk Hogan, to me, is just like, what a PR disaster this man has become. He used to be, like, just the smartest guy when it came to knowing every angle of everything and just being three steps ahead of everything. He was very, very coherent, very aware of the Hulk Hogan brand. And, my God, man's just, like, the last, like, 7 years. Ever since that reality show, that was the unwinding of Hulk Hogan, which, you know, ended in him shitting on a toilet and tweeting it out.
Yeah.
Disgusting. How did we ever get to that? Oh, a guy grabbing a girl's boob unsuspectingly during the Rumble Kiss Cam. Anyway, Ashley Massaro comes out and just wants to know if Maria will take all of her clothes off. You know, just a basic question. But before Maria can answer, Santino comes out and says the answer is no. No one wants to see her without her clothes on. Insults all of the sports teams in New York, and this leads to a chant of Let's Go Giants, who would be playing the Patriots, I believe, the following Sunday at the Super Bowl. And then Maria asks if the people want to see her in Playboy. Everyone cheers. And Morella says, don't listen to these sheep. They would cheer if you asked if they wanted hepatitis, to which some fans actually did cheer here on camera.
Yeah.
Santino was great here.
He's excellent.
And he says he has to go prepare for the Rumble. But first, he says if all the people here want to see someone with boobies, he's brought a surprise. And in comes someone with a blanket over their head. And it is revealed as Big Dick Johnson in a Patriots attire with a cut-off Tom Brady jersey and, like, thong?
Kind of, yeah. It was like in New York Giants underwear.
And he danced.
He danced. That he did. Is he still on the writing team?
No. He left a long time ago.
Okay. Well, this is okay for a buffer segment.
Sure. We continued the fat people theme with the WrestleMania 24 commercial that aired next, where Kelly had to save a fat guy from drowning and was about to give him mouth-to-mouth when Mae Young stepped in to give the guy mouth-to-mouth. Certainly made me want to buy WrestleMania. What a great sell job here this commercial was.
Mm. Well, what do you want them to do? Hype a match?
Forget that. Let's show a 80-year-old woman in a bathing suit putting her tongue into a guy's mouth.
Mm.
With the camera taking the place of the guy's mouth.
Yeah, point of view.
Then we go to Mike Adamley, who is laughing coming out of his commercial. Can't compose himself for his own segment here because, god damn, was that commercial just so funny. And the laugh would quickly transfer over to the viewing public as one of the most famous moments in wrestling history then took place, which, unfortunately, I was watching on DVD, and boy, did they clean this one up perfectly.
Oh, no.
And I did not get to relive it in all its glory.
Wow. 20,000 plus fans. Of course, Madison Square Garden has been sold out for weeks, and everyone in anticipation of tonight's Royal Rumble here. Another man who's been waiting anxiously with anticipation. His name is Jeff Hardy. In fact, it could be said that Jeff Hardy has waited all his life for tonight's golden moment.
That's what he said.
That is in wrestling infamy.
Now, how did they clean this up?
Well, they went to the graphic, and then he said Jeff Hardy. Because if you remember when he did the initial take, I believe he did say it correctly immediately after, and they just got rid of the flub.
Oh, the beauty of editing.
But for those live, we'll always remember Jeff Harvey. And the man basically was behind the eight ball from day number one.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy was pretty much doomed, and the WWE just tried to get as much as they could out of this guy. They had signed him to a three-year contract at a ridiculous amount of money, and he lasted about a year, and they even tried to make him the general manager at one point. It was a horrendous period with this guy and trying to get something out of him. The culmination being when this guy did a segment once with Shane McMahon in the ring, and you could visibly, like, and audibly hear Shane McMahon whispering the lines to Adamley during the segment on live television. Just a disaster of a character.
Mm-hmm.
The Mike Adamley error began. So then we got a video package on Orton. These were some very good videos here with Randy Orton as a kid, with shots of him with wrestlers as he was a kid coming up through OVW, his debut in 2002 beating Hardcore Holly on SmackDown, talking about how he has a confidence because he knows how good he is. And then it went into a Jeff Hardy music video featuring all of his career highlights and into the current angle featuring Randy Orton kicking Matt Hardy in the head, Hardy hitting a swanton off a metal truss on Raw. And it was after that, it was basically the last 2 weeks that Jeff Hardy gained all this momentum. And the week leading in, there was tons of interest of, will they put the title on Jeff Hardy? Because he's like caught fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big draw. And this Royal Rumble, this was the most purchased Rumble of the last couple of years. And I think a lot of that was attributed to how much this program got over
In
terms of a secondary match on the show. So we got Randy Orton defending the WWE title against Jeff Hardy. There was this dude in the front row who had a Hardy tattoo painted on his chest.
Yes.
Exposing his chest with his shirt over top of his head.
Oh, that's a look.
Yeah. Certainly. This was 2008. This is how people attended wrestling shows.
He's a creature.
That would be certain. Very long collar and elbow struggle at the bell. Orton is then clotheslined to the floor, eats a running dropkick from Hardy, and goes into the barricade. Orton is then on the floor. Hardy hits a running clothesline, goes back into the ring. Hardy runs into the corner, shoulder first into the steel post, and then Orton comes back with a power slam, a reverse choke, and then Hardy gets out, fights back, climbs to the top, but Orton rolls to the outside, and this is where Hardy hits a drop kick off the top. Orton goes to the floor, and Hardy hits a moonsault to a standing Randy Orton on the floor, and Hardy gets into the ring, goes for the twist of fate, but Orton counters, hits the RKO clean in the middle of the ring, and pins Jeff Hardy at 14 minutes and 3 seconds. Few people cried in the audience that Jeff Hardy lost, but he got a bunch of cheers after the match, and, you know, in hindsight, was the right call to make, because a few months later, Jeff Hardy would fail a wellness test and miss WrestleMania.
Oh.
So the idea of changing plans was not a good idea in this one, but a lot of people criticized this move and said, Jeff Hardy had really caught fire and you should go with someone when he's hot, but they stuck with their long-term plan, even if it was predictable to some people.
Well, despite the wellness failure, this was a good match, and I'm always amazed at how little hesitation Jeff Hardy has when he has to do those high spots. Like for this moonsault to the outside, just, you know, got up there and did it. Never really seems to think about it.
Yeah, and despite not getting the title here, when this buy rate came in, they certainly recognized Jeff Hardy being a big factor of that, and he was, like, scheduled to get the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania, and they were, I think, prepared at this point that, you know, this guy eventually will get a run with the title, and he did later that year, right at the end of the year, but, I mean, it was kind of his own issues that really prevented it from happening earlier. Then we go to Joey Styles and Taz, who were actually on this card. They were at the commentary desk. I have no idea why. And they throw to the Royal Rumble stats video, the highlight being that the music featured was the Pollock versus Ting theme.
Yes, the NFL Films music.
Yeah. No, it's ours.
Oh, okay.
I thought you composed that one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I made it on GarageBand.
And the end is, the voiceover says, the odds are this will be the greatest Royal Rumble ever. I don't know how you can put a numerical value on that happening, but that's what they were telling us. Odds are this will be the best Rumble ever.
Yeah.
So that's what the odds say. So usually way for these Rumbles during the brand split, we would, you know, get a combination of announcers. It would be, you know, like Jim Ross, JBL, and maybe Lawler. Nope. This year, Michael Cole, Jonathan Coachman, Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, Joey Styles, and Taz were all going to call this Rumble.
It was very unnecessary, especially with the ECW guys, because there wasn't even an ECW match on this show. I felt bad for them, flying all this way and sitting throughout the entire show with nothing.
They were
to say.
Out there the whole time just watching this.
And not only that, but everybody on these teams seemed to play the same roles. You had 3 play-by-play guys and then 3 babyface color commentators. There's just no need.
I have zero recollection of these 6 calling this Rumble, but I would love to have heard their... Because you hear guys talk about how a 3-man booth is usually very tough to pull off.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine trying to quarterback this 6-person announce booth.
With that said, I thought it turned out a lot better than I expected. They never spoke over each other once, so you have to wonder how, you know, how they were able to control all that on the headsets.
It's also, when you think about just the geography at ringside here, it's not like they're even all sitting together. They're all at separate desks, and sometimes, you know, you can just make eye contact, and you kind of develop that rapport where you know when someone's thought is finished, where you can pick up, so you avoid talking over one another.
Yeah.
They probably had none of that to help them, but you're right. It's not like they were tripping over each other during this match, and it actually, I think Styles and Taz knew to kind of lay out for the majority.
But did it add anything to six people? Absolutely
not. It should have just been, you know, Ross, Lawler, and maybe Cole. Put those guys in, and that's all you needed here. Rumble starts off with Michael Buffer. Actually, the first time they had ever used this guy.
What, ever?
Yeah.
Really?
WWF or WWE, they had never used
him. Not even some of the older shows.
No, just did Nitro and pay-per-views and WCW. Okay. But yes, after all these years, he finally got to say, let's get ready to rumble for the Royal Rumble.
Ah.
And he was actually featured in the commercial, if you remember, in that Subway ad. He had a cameo in that ad. So Michael Buffer comes out, does the introduction, and then introduces the first entrant, The Undertaker, who was number 30 the prior year in the 2007 Rumble, and won it. Yes, the only person who's drawn number 30 to win it.
And thus far.
Thus far. And number two, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. And these two, of course, finished the Rumble last year. They were going to kick off the Rumble this year. So starting it off with a buzz and on a high note.
Absolutely.
This was definitely intriguing. And something that it really reminded me, Way, of the fact that when you were still keeping these brands separate for the most part, it allowed you to have these kind of unique scenarios. Like, you hadn't seen two guys together since the prior year's Rumble. I mean, you look at right now, is there, of the main roster, does a dream match exist right now? A full-time?
Of the main roster, let me think about that. I mean, you have a lot of new guys right now that you can consider, you know, maybe like, you know, something like a Seth Rollins and a Daniel Bryan you could consider to be a dream match of some sort.
I think that's a dream match to a very small minority of fans. It's a cool match to see, but, you know, like that year at WrestleMania, they did Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle. Like, here are these guys, they never worked together.
Right, you're saying, can there be a moment like a Taker and Shawn Michaels at the end of a Rumble?
Of regular guys.
Right.
There isn't.
Yeah, maybe not. No, because they're simply not separated anymore.
Anyway, Taker runs into him in the corner repeatedly and then misses a running boot in the corner and ends up on the outside of the apron, grabs Michaels by the throat to get back into the ring. Number three is Santino Marella, who comes out, gets into the ring, poses, and takes a sweet chin music and is tossed out by The Undertaker right away. So he was the first eliminated entrant of the 2008 Rumble, much like he was the first one eliminated in the 2013 Royal Rumble.
Right. But that's how you maximize the value of that character, right?
Michaels comes from behind after Taker eliminates Santino to try and eliminate him, but cannot. Michaels pulls Taker off of the top during the old school, and he takes a big bump onto the mat. Great Khali was out fourth. He was greeted by chants of, "You can't wrestle." And then from there, Michaels and Taker grab each, or Khali and Taker grab each other by the throat. Khali falls into the rope, missing a chop, and Taker sends him over. Quick night for the Great Khali.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth was Hardcore Holly. Number six was John Morrison. And Styles mentions how Morrison and Miz were being mauled by fans last night who were trying to get into their limo. And the announcers just dismiss his point. Say, what does that have to do with the Rumble? And Styles just says, well, I'm just saying they might not have gotten a lot of sleep last night. That's all. It's like, man, Styles just got dumped on here. It's like, shut the fuck up. Michael's here. Actually broke his nose here during the Rumble.
Wow.
And this happened really early on, and he was out there for a long, long time. So
yeah, do you know what the spot?
I missed what spot it was, but if I had to guess, it was probably from Hardcore Holly. That would have been my guess,
okay.
But I'm assuming. So Michael's here. Kudos to him here, gutting it through here with a broken nose. Seventh was Tommy Dreamer, who Taz calls the homeboy. And
no. If Dreamer wins, is he going to challenge for the ECW title?
I don't know. That'd be also a question. If Chavo Guerrero won the Rumble, would he challenge himself?
Obviously, he wouldn't care about the ECW title.
Guess not. Maybe Dreamer would challenge for the ECW title.
At Mania.
That would have been awesome. Dreamer was wearing a Royal Rumble t-shirt, just in case you had any ideas that he might go far in this Rumble. And the crowd got behind him. There was a Tommy Dreamer chant here at Madison Square Garden.
That ECW nostalgia pop is always there.
That was probably a big highlight of his career here. You know, Madison Square Garden, sold out garden, chanting for him.
Mm-hmm.
Batista came out number eight, and Batista would last the entire Rumble here from the eighth position. So going very long here. There was a stare down between Batista and Taker, who were coming off their big feud throughout 2007. But Dreamer goes for Batista and gets dumped out to the floor. So Dreamer Chavo, the big match would not be happening at WrestleMania.
No.
Morrison and Batista then began fighting here and ended with Batista spearing Morrison.
Oh.
So there was your hardcore nod.
Yeah.
Ninth out was Hornswoggle McMahon, who climbed under the ring before entering and just hid under the ring. 10th was Chuck Palumbo, and Palumbo's gimmick at this time was that Michelle McCool was managing him, and she was starting to show up with bruises. And Palumbo was beating her. And Jamie Noble was coming to the defense of Michelle McCool.
Oh, God.
So I wonder if Undertaker received word of this and would go after Palumbo in the Rumble, but apparently not. He doesn't watch SmackDown. He just performs there.
Are you serious? This was an actual
gimmick? Didn't you hear it in the commentary? Yeah, it was like...
a woman beater.
Yeah, Chuck Palumbo, and he was getting the cold shoulder from the locker room because he might be involved in some domestic disputes.
Oh, wow.
Yep, yep. Actually doing domestic violence angles in 2008. Number 11 was Jamie Noble, who had taped ribs and was feuding with Palumbo, runs in, and Palumbo just puts him on the outside of the apron, hits him with a big boot, and eliminates Noble.
Strike one for the...
hit him so hard, he turned him into an agent. Number 12 was CM Punk, who got a very big reaction, hit a series of running knees to Taker, Michaels, and Morrison, and then Punk tosses Palumbo over and hits a running knee to eliminate him. 13th out was Cody Rhodes. 14th was Umaga, who eliminates Holly after hitting him with the Samoan spike. 15th out was Snitsky. 16th was a much younger version of The Miz. And Morrison and Miz, who were a tag team unit at this time, they go after Punk together, who were feuding on ECW. Shelton Benjamin was 17th out, leaps to the top and rams Morrison and Miz from the top turnbuckle, gets down onto the mat, and Michaels just hits him with a sweet chin music and sends Benjamin to the floor, who was challenging Santino for the shortest length in the Rumble this year. Mm. Poor Shelton. 18th out, they went with the nostalgia surprise here with Jimmy Snuka. And this was incredible. Everyone sold here for Snuka. Punk, Morrison, Michaels, even The Undertaker went to headbutt him, and The Undertaker sold for Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah.
So this guy, certainly the locker room was vouching for here. Maybe Snuka thought he had one more run left in him.
He looked like he could barely get in the ring.
He was moving incredibly slowly. Mm-hmm. 19th was Roddy Piper, and he, of course, had been battling cancer, so this was a bit of a feel-good moment here. Coming back to the Garden, why he took his shirt off, I don't know if I would have made that decision.
He's roundy Roddy Piper.
Oof. And got in, and everyone stood still as Snuka and Piper went at it, reliving their big feud from 1984. Piper actually took a bump in this. I was stunned. And then 20th was Kane, who just dumped Snuka and Piper right away out of the ring. So That was enough of them. 21st was Carlito. Cool sequence here with Carlito, Morrison, and Punk as Carlito jumped off the second rope and went for a double elbow to both, but got caught and backflipped onto his feet. 22nd was Mick Foley, who got a big reaction. 23rd was Mr. Kennedy, who also got a big pop. 24th, Big Daddy V. And Taker sends out
Snitsky.
And then Michaels comes from behind, eliminates The Undertaker after... about 32 minutes or so in this match. And then from behind, Mr. Kennedy eliminates Shawn Michaels. So some big eliminations here at this point in the match with the two guys that started off the Rumble. Taker then leg drops Snitsky on the announce table. And I'm sure many people had a fear at this time. Oh, God, is this the WrestleMania direction? Undertaker and Snitsky.
You probably didn't catch this at this point because you were watching the DVD, but... on the live version, they actually completely missed that spot on the cameras. We didn't get to see it. Instead, what we saw was a wide shot of the ring and Shawn Michaels actually running around the cameras towards the back. At the same time that he's running towards the back, a cameraman basically doesn't see him, moves ahead, rams his camera right into Shawn Michaels' head.
Oh!
Yeah.
With the broken nose.
With the broken nose.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Guy.
What a rough night for... Mr. Michaels, wow. 25th was Mark Henry, and the Miz is eliminated here as Hornswoggle comes from under the ring and pulls Miz out by the arm and goes back under the ring after after pulling Miz out.
I can't believe the referee would allow this to happen.
Yeah, a little bit
Jimmy
of
Corderas.
Jimmy Corderas. Some of the Rumbles we've reviewed, not his best nights, I guess, by missing some flagrant disregard of the rules. 26, ECW champion Chavo Guerrero in the "this title means jack shit in this company" entrant. Kane eliminates Morrison. Henry then pulls Hornswoggle into the ring, and Big Daddy V goes to help Mark Henry, but then Finley runs in, attacks them both with a shillelagh, and takes Hornswoggle by the hand and takes him to the back. Hornswoggle never eliminated.
No.
What's going on here?
maybe he'll claim that title shot at some point.
Wow. So there you go. Hornswoggle. Never eliminated
him. I just thought it was kind of pointless to do that whole thing with Hornswoggle. What was the point of it?
Well, yeah, I don't know. It didn't do anything, didn't advance anything other than maybe we'd get a Hornswoggle Miz match on TV out of this. That was it.
Okay.
Ross then announces that Finlay ran out too early and was disqualified. Mm-hmm. How many disqualifications have we had in Rumble history? I can't think of any.
I don't know.
Anyway. Number 28, Elijah Burke, the Pope.
Yep.
Comes out. Chavo eliminates Punk here, and they actually did the Benoit Big Show spot with, like, the guillotine over the top rope. Anyway, 29, a very uneventful elimination for CM Punk, who was kind of the main babyface on ECW at this point, and the champion eliminates the guy chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
29th was Triple H, who was looking very large in 2008, and Hunter just runs wild in here. He eliminates Cody Rhodes, Big Daddy V, goes back and forth with Mick Foley, and then tosses him into Burke, eliminating both. That's like the biggest geek spot in the Rumble, throwing a guy into another guy, and they both just bounce over the top to the floor.
Yeah.
It's like something out of a video game.
Well, at least Foley had a bit of a moment here with Triple H, especially at Madison Square Garden, and they made mention of their street fight about 8 years ago. But, you know, Foley, by this point, I don't think anybody was taking him seriously as a main eventer.
No.
At least not on Triple H's level.
And then the 30th entrant. They had the countdown, and John Cena's music hits, and the entire arena explodes.
I remember at the Law, you know, you guys, everybody was all surprised.
Oh, this stunned everybody, because Cena had torn his pectoral muscle right at the end of September, and he was supposed to be out for quite a number of months. He even did media in the UK talking about he's going to hopefully be back by May, and everyone thought he was going to miss WrestleMania. So when he showed up here, this was a legitimate surprise. I don't think anyone knew it was coming outside of a few key people in the back and probably in the Rumble that night. Comes out, eliminates Carlito, Chavo, Mark Henry, has a stare down with Triple H. Then Batista clotheslines Kennedy out, then clotheslines Umaga out of the ring, and Hunter and Batista send Umaga out, and we're down to three. Triple H, Batista, and John Cena. All, three babyfaces at the conclusion of the Royal Rumble.
I never really have that big of an issue with that. I mean, to me, they want...
I'm just talking about the connection, once again, to this year's
okay.
Rumble.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and believable that they could have gone in any direction here with these three. I think a lot of people were assuming Hunter would win this Rumble because they didn't think Cena was was an option during this year. So anyway, it's down to the three of them. They all do their mannerisms, which were a little hokey. Batista gets back body dropped by Cena and then gets clotheslined over the top by Hunter. So we're down to Hunter and Cena. Crowd starts booing Cena when he gets on offense, and they cheer Hunter. And Cena goes for the FU. Hunter gets off his shoulders, hits a DDT. Then Cena counters the pedigree and FUs Hunter to the floor for the win. 51 minutes and 30 seconds. And Ross does the big post-match call as the pyro goes off. And John Cena points to the WrestleMania sign. I am going there. John Cena wins the Rumble. Very memorable moment. One of the biggest surprises in Rumble history. And I thought capped off a very good Royal Rumble match.
I thought the match was okay. I will say
I like this past Sunday's Rumble better than this Rumble.
Yeah.
Outside of, you got the real big surprise with John Cena. That was unexpected, and I still remember that very vividly.
Right. And I will say, like, for this Rumble, it didn't really offer much in the way of surprises outside of the Snuka and Piper appearances. So, you know, to me, it wasn't one of the better Rumbles that I've ever seen, but that Cena moment certainly is one that I think stands out for a lot of people. And I thought this was a strong undercard, too.
Yeah, I liked the title matches. First two matches were kind of take them or leave them. But overall, I thought, you know, a good Rumble. Not a great Rumble, but a good Rumble. So I'm going to give this one a 6 out of 10.
I give it a 7.
6 out of 10 for me. All right, so there you go. Those are our thoughts on the Rumble. Who do you want to hear from, Wade? Dave Meltzer or the people?
Let's go to Dave.
Okay, this was from January the 27th of 2008, right after the Royal Rumble. Dave Meltzer on the Law with Dan the Mouth Lavransky.
Dave, after that pay-per-view, I got some questions for you, brother.
Yeah, what's up?
Wow.
That was quite a finish.
That was a really, really, really strong show. Great pay-per-view, amazing finish. What's the latest, Dave? Obviously, all week long we were told that Cena's injured. He's doing a movie. He's not going to be back for a year and a half or a year.
No. They were saying May, and I don't know if the movie's a swerve. I don't think it is. I think he's probably just doing this show. You know, maybe some TVs and obviously Mania, obviously the main event of Mania, and back full time in May or when they're done filming the movie, or I don't know. I don't think they made up the movie, but I guess we'll know in a day or two.
Now, yeah, well, that's what we're trying to figure out. When have you heard anything, Dave, about like when this was the decision was decided? Because it strikes me as a very last minute thing bringing in Cena, because it was all really mapped out to be either kind of Trips or Taker winning the Rumble.
I don't know when the decision would have been made. I mean, I know that it was Taker in 3 weeks ago?
Right.
And then I know Trips. I was told that it's Taker and that Helmsley was petitioning to get back in, and if he got back in, expect him to win. But I just thought he was going to get back in and still lose and win the chamber. Obviously, he's not going to win the chamber because the chamber's got to be a SmackDown match, I would presume, which would still probably mean Undertaker wins the chamber and faces Cena. That's how I'm figuring it. And then I guess we got Cena and Orton and probably Triple H and Batista is what I would guess would be the other match. I don't know that, but I know that the Triple H and Batista had been talked about for a long, long time. Now, Cena and Batista had also been talked about for a long time, but that would require Batista to beat Orton for the WWE Championship, and I don't see that one happening.
Right. Now, is there any chance maybe, again, because of Cena and maybe not being what 100%, that they'll maybe make his title match a three-way and put Trips in there? Because I could see it being...
Oh, yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that, too.
Yeah,
that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, to me, that seems to be the way going, because I would suspect that, I mean, even though Cena, he looked great tonight, that he's still not 100%. So I would guess that maybe they might put him in a three-way to make things easier.
Yeah.
And obviously, I guess we'll get Taker and Edge on the other side.
I would think so. I mean, that's been the plan all along. I mean, really, the only other choice would be Batista, and of the two... I don't know. I mean, they did do a tease of Triple H and Batista.
True, they did, and they left him in right near. They left him in till the basic end of the Rumble too.
Yeah, and Triple H was the one who eliminated Batista too.
That's right.
So I could definitely see that. I mean,
right.
I thought as far as super booking tonight.
Yes, excellent. I mean, I hope TNA was paying attention
about the Hardy thing, but if you look at where they were going, and if they were doing the Cena thing, I mean, Cena against Jeff Hardy at WrestleMania just doesn't do it.
No. Well, was there any serious talk of putting the belt on Hardy, Dave?
There was discussion, but I mean, I think that the minute that they decided to put Cena in, any talk of Hardy winning had to have ended, because it just wouldn't make any sense. I mean, I had definitely heard. I mean, I had heard a week ago that it was not going to change. It was going to be Orton winning, but, you know, I don't know. I just thought that there was a lot of momentum there. The only thing that, when Hardy came out, that look on his face was like, I think he had heard, you know, had felt the momentum so much that I'm guessing, just from the look on his face, that he didn't know until the day of the show that he wasn't.
Right.
You know, because if not, he'd have been comfortable with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it definitely looks like they've been doing a lot of thinking and working things out here. Now, the one thing coming out of this week that we really need to talk about is this whole idea with Bobby Lashley here. He posted on his website that he's left the company. I haven't seen anything official from the WWE yet. What's the story here, Dave?
It's a long, complicated story, and no one's talking because it's such a long, complicated story. But the gist is that he has not been released, which is why they haven't posted anything.
Right.
But he's not coming back.
Right.
And they're working out a release.
So what is now?
So,
what's
so when I'm sure when the sides agree to a release, they will post. You know, we wish Bobby luck and whatever.
All his future endeavors,
as
they always do.
Yeah. And as far as, like, what he's doing next, the gist of it is, I mean, he's thinking in a lot of different directions, but the decision is more he wanted to get out of WWE, then he wanted to go somewhere else. It wasn't like, you know, I want to go, you know, and do mixed martial arts. It's like, I want to get out of WWE, now what do I do?
No.
Okay, maybe I'll do mixed martial arts. I mean, he wanted out.
And was it like he felt badly treated, the tours, the traveling schedule?
It's everything. I think that there's some underlying reason that there's an underlying reason that nobody wants out, and that's the gist of it. And WWE doesn't want it out, and that's why he's going to be quiet, because it gives him leverage in negotiating a release on more favorable terms. You know, because if he didn't have that leverage, you know, I from what I gather, he's got, you know, a lot of years left on his contract, and they could just say, well, go quit and sit at home for a couple of years, and obviously he don't want to do that either. So it's an underlying nasty thing, pretty damn nasty, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, but no one can talk about it, and I don't anticipate anyone will, because WWE, I don't think, you know, I just don't think anyone will.
Right. Now, there has been lots of talk of maybe moving in an MMA direction. What about TNA? I would think TNA might be interested.
I would think they'd be interested in him for sure. I mean, if he can go, I mean, that again, that all depends on the release and what they can negotiate. Because, you know, WWE legally, you know, they could make it, you know, and just say, look, okay, yeah, we'll release you to go to MMA, but we don't want you going to TNA for the duration of the contract. That's a long, long time. And you know, so I think what he does next depends on, you know, his lawyers and their lawyers and how this all works out, and you know, maybe it'll all fall apart and then it'll really get nasty. So I don't know. It's a very weird thing. I didn't know it was happening, but someone who was very close to the situation did remind me that, in fact, 6 months ago, I was told, but I just blew it off.
Right.
But it's not something that just happened. It's been brewing for a long, long time.
Right. You're listening to Live Audio Wrestling here on Fight Network Radio. We're talking with Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave, another thing in the WWE that we got to touch on, and I'm wondering if it had any influence over the way CM Punk has been handled this past weekend in tonight's Royal Rumble. But Dave Lagana, who was the head writer for ECW, had got the boot this week. And again, I was wondering if you could give us any details on what happened there. Because he seemed, I mean, he was a strong ECW fan. He'd been there since 2002.
That's another one where I guess that, you know, that they'd been planning that move for a while. I'm not sure if there was a straw that broke the camel's back on that, although the rating did not do him any favors.
Right. Is that why, I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, they really seem to be doing a good job of building Punk up, and then this week they just seem to, like, obliterate him.
I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. I don't know. I couldn't sense that they, you know, closed the door on him. Although when I watched SmackDown, I wasn't surprised they lost, but I was surprised at the way he lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you know, Rumble, they didn't make him into a major player, but I didn't necessarily think they would.
Right.
You know, losing to Chavo, you know, that I my impression was is that that program was going to go in that direction no matter what anyway, that was the long-term plan, you know, just to get the belts in the Vicky Guerrero family. So, but, yeah, I guess I don't know. I don't know, and I don't know what the, you know, the difference with Lagana out, what that will mean as far as, you know, Punk. I don't know.
Right. Now, were you surprised tonight on the pay-per-view too, Dave, in the reaction of the New York crowd, cheering Edge, booing Ray, stuff like that?
I didn't expect him to boo Ray. You know, aside from that, there weren't any real surprises, though. You know,
well, I thought it was pretty funny when, I think, was it Cena and Trips in there at the end, and they were boo-yay, back and forth.
Yeah, but, you know, Cena in New York, you know, especially for a Rumble crowd where you have a lot of guys and it's not like the kid crowd,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're going to boo Cena. You know, I won't say in any city, but in most cities, when you got the guy crowd, the people who buy their tickets early, you know, for a big show, Cena's not going to be popular. When you have the house show crowd, which is the little kids coming with their parents to see Cena, you know, he's going to be over like mad. I mean, that's usually what happened. Mysterio being booed surprised me. But then again, here that's the same thing. It's not they didn't have the kid crowd.
Right.
And Mysterio's the big thing
for the kids.
Kid crowd. And
right.
maybe those people were, because you notice they didn't really cheer Edge. They more booed Ray.
Right, right.
And I think that it's that same thing. It's this was the adult New York crowd trying to say, you know, it's the remnants of the old crowd going like, you know, we don't like this turning into a kid show, but it has, and it's, you know, you're late on that one. That's just what it is now.
There you go. Who's your prediction? Lesnar versus Frank Mir.
Ooh, that's a tough
UFC
one.
UFC 82.
I think it's going to be close. I think, you know, Lesnar's going to have him probably with the ground and pound for a long time, and then maybe Frank Mir will pull out a heel hook. Somewhere.
I think Steve Mazzagatti might get intertwined in this and, you know, kind of save Mir at one point.
Right.
All right, let's go into everyone's feedback now to the Royal Rumble. We promised, well, we didn't promise we would do this, but we're doing it anyway. So we will start off with Bavin from New Jersey. Hello, guys. Thank you for the review. Now, I didn't order this show live when it happened, but when I read that John Cena had returned from his chest injury, well, it was a pectoral tear, I was shocked. I got my cable remote and ordered the replay, and never again will WWE take my money with their horrible and uneventful pay-per-views. Now on to the show. And yes, I did watch this show in its entirety again. The Flair MVP match was decent, and all the work in the ring was good. Now, Miz, that is how you do a figure four leg lock. I had totally forgot this was a career-threatening match. Guess WWE does build long term. Let's not forget the monumental debut of the most revered personality in all of entertainment, Mike Adamley. I totally forgot about JBL Jericho, the failure that was Save Us Y2J. JBL was berating and insulting Jericho and telling his kids how pathetic their father is by the tone of his voice. Just sickening. It's awesome stuff, and what hell of a bloodletting in this match. And good God almighty, what an unprotected chair shot JBL took. Oh, look, Ashley Massaro, the bony punk chick who no one gave a shit about, and my favorite comedian at the time, Santino Marella, before he became unbearable. Always loved Edge and his reign as the best in the world on SmackDown. Him and Vicky fit so well together that anything Vicky does now is so uninspiring because she's become a one-note joke in Excuse Me. Edge Mysterio was kind of disappointing. Let's go to the end here. Well, he says, the Rumble itself is pretty good. Probably the last good one. I give the show a 6 out of 10 just for the Cena return.
Andrew Sheehy. 2008 was a unique time for the WWE as the company was starting to transition to the hated PG format for all of its programming. This show, however, gives us some stuff that was still coming out of the Ruthless Aggression / Brad extension period. The opener between MVP and Flair was above average at best with Flair going over in his final match at Madison Square Garden. JBL Jericho was disappointing, to say the least, with the former APA member getting the DQ win in his pay-per-view return. Edge Mysterio for the world title was decent. It set up a rematch at the pay-per-view with Big Show making his return. Jeff Hardy Orton was okay, but it was overshadowed by one of the most memorable Botchamania moments of all time. Prior to it, with Mike Adamley calling Jeff Hardy Jeff Harvey. That moment sums up Adamley's horror-awful time with the company. Finally, the Rumble match was great with John Cena making his surprise return from injury to win it. Fine show, 7.5 David Tyree helmet catches out of 10.
We go to Gaurav Kumar from India. Hey guys, long-time listener from India, first-time feedbacker. I remember watching this pay-per-view on TV. Here in India, we get pay-per-views for free on TV, just like other shows like Raw and SmackDown. I thought the MVP Flair match was slow, but the New York crowd was fully behind the Nate. I enjoyed the feud between Jericho and JBL, and I guess this might have been the last time we saw a superstar strangling another with a cable wire and not getting fired. All was well until Jericho botched big time, and the crowd booed their lungs out. Edge versus Rey Mysterio was a pretty solid match, and Vicky added an extra element to this match. I was exhausted before the Orton Hardy match and was waiting for the Rumble match to begin, although I did like it when Orton fell out of the ring and his head rotated 45 degrees. I thought he broke his neck. The John Cena return in the Rumble match was huge and the crowd popped like crazy. You can see Jimmy Corderas's what the fuck face when Cena's music hits. I guess even the referees didn't know that Cena was coming back. Pretty decent pay-per-view in my opinion. I give it an 8 out of 10 because I get to watch pay-per-views for free here in my country.
Our next piece of feedback from...
By the way, if someone can get a screen grab of the Jimmy Corderas what the fuck face, it would entertain me greatly.
What the fuck face. From Idaho, this was the first time I had watched this event, and after having done so, I wish you would have given us a swerve. Although the matches leading up to the Rumble were all okay, the Rumble itself was the worst I can recall ever watching. It started with both Michaels and Taker both frequently putting themselves over the top rope, and yet for some reason, neither would simply push the other over to eliminate them. The theme for this Rumble should have been Wasted Young Talent. As you look all over the names that were in this event that are either not in the company 5 years later or are barely surviving at the mid-card level, the exception being CM Punk, of course. Got a fact check for ya. JR says that the biggest man usually wins the Rumble, except for Yokozuna, has the biggest man ever won the Rumble. Finally, the cherry on top was when Taker was getting stomped on in the corner, and Taz says, and I quote, "Taker is actually in a good spot. Due to the prelude matches being all right, I will give the show a 2 out of 10.
Well, that was always like their big, because Andre the Giant, he always, you know, would go over in battle royals. That was his specialty. So that was kind of a, when they introduced the Royal Rumble, they would always bring up that stat of Andre the Giant. But you are right. Outside of Yokozuna, typically the biggest guy does not always win. We go on to Tenise Sarway. I love when there's shows at the Garden, and the 2008 Rumble is no exception. A nice little opener with Flair and MVP. Miz should watch every Flair match until he learns how to do the figure four correctly. I remember Jericho mentioning this feud and match in his second book with JBL. He wasn't too keen on this match, but I thought it was okay. Jeff Hardy is just one of those guys where any promotion he goes to, he's just over. The match with Orton was fine, but ending with the RKO coming out of nowhere rubbed me the wrong way. I would have preferred the old roll-up with the hook of the trunks, in my opinion. I enjoyed the Rumble match, and the New York crowd made it even better. The Cena return surprised me because of his injury, but hey, that's what the Rumble is all about. I had fun watching this Rumble event, and I'm looking forward to having fun watching this year's Rumble. Well, we hope you did.
Quixote. When I watched this compared to the Royal Rumble 97 from 2 weeks ago, I gotta say, it was worlds apart. I was not watching WWE during either time, but the way the 2008 Rumble match was scripted, I understood nearly all wrestlers, their characters, personalities, even storylines within a 60-minute match, all except for Elijah Burke, who failed within 5 seconds. The 97 match just confused me and even bored me at times. Great movement, great action, crowd was hot, stories were told in the ring, the moment all the fighters stopped to watch Piper and Snuka go at it was brilliant. And even though you did tell us who the winner of this match was going to be, I forgot until it actually happened. That's a good match. This is why I love the Royal Rumble match. I hope this week is like this. Thanks again.
We go to Caesar. Thank you for going back to 2008. A well-deserved review. The big draws for this pay-per-view for me was Madison Square Garden, Jeff Hardy, JBL, and the first WWE pay-per-view in HD. The 2008 Rumble match featured a lot of great moments, and I thought the MSG crowd helped the match feel special. They should do more Rumbles at MSG. My pick at the time was Triple H, since he lost his spot at the Rumble and had to work his way back. Michael Buffer announcing was great. Taker and HBK starting the match was also great, but the spot of the match was Roddy Piper and Jimmy Snuka having a match while the guys were watching. This was like watching MSG from 1985. But of course, the most remembered spot was the John Cena return. He may be the only guy to have the biggest pop and the most heat in the span of 4 minutes. Batista, Triple H, and John Cena has to be my favorite final three. I was okay with Cena winning, but it didn't matter the next month since Triple H got the title match at No Way Out, and Cena got inserted as well. Thank you so much for reviewing this Rumble. For a suggestion for next week's review, well, that you have to put into the thread, the Democratic way. Yeah, what did you think about that way? Because that was the year they had Cena the next night cut a promo that he was cashing in his shot at No Way Out, and then, as Caesar mentioned, it would be become a three-way with Orton, Hunter, and Cena at that year's WrestleMania. I did not like that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody who, you know, the point of the Rumble and why it's so, I guess, so revered as an event is because the champion, the winner of the Rumble, gets to fight for the championship at the biggest stage. And to do that earlier, I think it really negates the value of the match.
I'm with you.
We go to Jack from England, who says, "I'm not a fan of the WWE title match. It felt a little slow and stilted, although it does make me look forward to Orton's eventual heel turn this year. Regarding the Rumble match itself, it was wonderful to see it opened by the legend that is Michael Buffer, introducing two greats such as The Undertaker and HBK. I'm not at all ashamed to say that to this day I still mark out for Cena's return. The reaction he got was fantastic, and one can't deny that every single person in that arena was ecstatic to see him. I wonder if he will ever return to that level of universal adoration. Madison Square Garden is such a good venue for the Rumble. It feels a lot more intimate and intense, and you are usually guaranteed a hot crowd. Overall, I'd say it was a very good Rumble. There were a lot of big names. It didn't drag at any point, and it had high energy. 8 Viscera Tits out of 10.
Jeff from New Jersey. This had to be one of the better Rumble matches. I love Rumbles at MSG, as the setup is great. You can see the entrance across from the hard cam, which I think helps for this type of match. The opening of HBK versus Undertaker was awesome. This really worked as a great focus of the match. They should have used this to build to an HBK Undertaker Mania match instead of waiting another year, similar to how Royal Rumble 1990 built to the Hogan Warrior match. Funny moment when Undertaker slammed HBK. HBK lost his gum, picked it up, and put it back in his mouth.
Oh.
Awesome New York crowd chanting chanting "You can't wrestle at Kali" and going crazy for relatively unpushed guys like Tommy Dreamer and CM Punk. Great spot when Mick Foley and Elijah Burke were eliminated together. Triple H tossed Foley into the ropes, hit Burke, and both went out. Piper and Snuka was a nice retro moment, but maybe Piper should follow Snuka's lead and wear a singlet or shirt to cover his gut. Ending was great with the returning John Cena versus Triple H. New York crowd totally healing on Cena. False finishes on each of their end moves was really well done. Hearing announcers calling John Cena's move the FU is still funny to me. Overall, I give this 8 out of 10. Best opening to a Rumble match since Demolition, Axe, and Smash drew numbers 1 and 2 in 1989.
Alexander Rios from Miami. I love a lot of this Rumble because most of the matches had a story to tell, and most did with various degrees of success. Randy Orton versus Jeff Harvey Hardy. For a match that was pretty well hyped on Raw, the match itself doesn't seem memorable, probably because Royal Rumble was the time when mid-carders would get the experimental title shot, Hardcore Holly in 2004, for example, to see if they can hang with the main eventers and are at all over. And the Rumble match itself, well, the MSG crowd was awesome. Like Jeff from New Jersey, I do have to bring light to the "you can't wrestle" chants of Cali, but I love the start with Michaels and Taker picking off right where they left off the previous year and adding that history to the mythos of their rivalry in the years to come. And when Shawn eliminated Taker, his look of nonchalant sorry while shrugging his shoulders, I laughed at that. CM Punk must have been the only guy at the time who can get an ECW-like crowd to go crazy for him without actually ever wrestling in the real ECW. And finally, number 30. I felt like I was getting Rickrolled. John Cena. So much for that biceps injury. Thank you, New York, for booing this buffoon. We all know what happens next. Taunts get traded. Five moves of doom. Cena wins like he always does, and at some point later on in the year, wins the title. Yippee.
J.M. Templeton. I think the 2008 Rumble was one of the better ones because of the stories it told. Taker and HBK at number 1 and 2, the rise of Jeff Hardy, the craftiness of Edge and Vicky, and the return of Cena. There were flaws, however. I was thrilled when Y2J came back the previous month, but was disappointed to see that the crowds didn't react to him as well as I would have thought. His program with Orton seemed rushed, and the JBL detour was bizarre. Jericho bumps into him, so JBL costs him the title, strangles him to near death, and then threatens his kids? Overreaction, perhaps? I thought that the WWE title match had one of the more memorable pushes in recent years. They really got behind Hardy and told a good story, and the match was very good. A part of me feels they should have put the title on Hardy, but I guess they couldn't really put the strap on him so close to WrestleMania. It's a good thing they didn't, too, as he got busted again before Mania. I never felt like Hardy was ever as hot again, and when he did win the title for a month at the end of 2008, it wasn't quite the same. The Cena return was probably the best shock return in Rumble history, except for Haku in 2001, of course. As great as it was, I think the WWE hurt themselves trying to cram Cena into their Mania storylines. He challenges for the title at No Way Out instead, loses, but still gets into a three-way. That's not the main event. Anyway, he loses that too, only to have Hunter win the title the next month. Made the Rumble feel insignificant, and I feel started a downward trend for it in importance. Since 08, only one Rumble winner has actually main evented Mania. That was Orton in 09, and he lost in a match that will only be remembered for how inferior it was to Taker Michaels. All that said, a pretty entertaining show.
Paul Ellett. 2007 fell to pieces following the Benoit incident, so 2008 had a lot of work to do to rebuild. This pay-per-view was an excellent start. Any pay-per-view in Madison Square Garden kicks everything up a notch and makes it stand out in memory. Since this 2008 Rumble, few have stood out as the whole card. You had all the factors in place here. Two title matches featuring great performers, Michael Buffer, the classic mini entranceway, a memorable debut, albeit Mike Adamley's, and the Rumble itself. Plus, if I'm correct, this was the first pay-per-view in HD. Skipping straight to the Rumble, I thought it was pretty good, starting strong with Michaels and Taker, which was a nice callback to the year before, when they were the final two. However, I thought quite a lot of the eliminations were of little significance when those guys had lasted long periods, and the Piper-Snuka interaction felt a bit like a charity case. However, the main selling point of this Rumble was the shock Cena return, which I remember no one knew or reported beforehand. To quote Matt Stryker, "I was marking out, bro, at the time." Even the New York crowd was lapping Cena up initially before remembering that, being the difficult New York fans that they're meant to be, they were meant to be booing them, and began doing so. Like Jericho's return this past Sunday, it makes you wonder how different a viewing experience wrestling would be without the internet leaking stuff. 7 in repaired pectoral muscles out of 10.
And our final piece of feedback comes from Trent in Texas. I hope you guys saw the botched bulldog that Jericho did to JBL. I watched the live feed, and it was edited off the DVD release. Also, I did not see that. JBL sold it, and it infuriated the MSG crowd so much that they completely turned on the match. Jericho also did the most unnecessary blade job I can ever think of. I wouldn't be shocked if Jericho just panicked after that terrible botch, and this was a last-ditch effort to get the fans back. This was really a throwaway undercard match that shouldn't have gone longer than 10 minutes, and Jericho put on a sick crimson mask that didn't add anything to the heat for the match. Neither one of these guys are really over at this time. Coach doesn't get enough shit for how awful he was as an announcer. This guy now works for ESPN, the mecca for sports broadcasting, and could easily have been the worst broadcaster in WWE history. I have no idea what this guy was supposed to be as a color commentator. It felt like a bland host of a G-rated Nickelodeon show was doing color commentary for a Royal Rumble. The SmackDown color guy went from JBL to essentially Mario Lopez Light. Seeing his appearance in the Rumble might have been the greatest moment in Rumble match history. It was such a great surprise that he won over the MSG crowd. This is the equivalent of Satan himself showing up in Vatican City and winning over all the clergymen. Just an epic surprise that I, as a fan, hadn't expected since the NWO. I would go so far as to say the best surprise in the internet age and probably my favorite Cena moment of all time. Good show overall. It's a Rumble and MSG, for God's sake. How could it not be? 8 out of 10. Trent liked the show.
8 out of 10.
Did not like the JBL Jericho match. Thank you, everyone, for your feedback. We appreciate it very much. Rumble season, I think we can officially say, is over.
Yeah, I think so.
We're rumbled out for the year, and we are going to be taking a stark contrast next week because, Mr. Ting, we have a guest joining us live next week.
Ooh.
You might not be familiar with the name. Maybe you are if you are in the Toronto comedy scene, but a stand-up comedian himself. Dylan Gott is going to be joining us live in studio, a good friend of the program. So he will be coming in, and as we like to do with our guests, we like to ask them what they would like to review. So next week, we are going to review ECW WrestlePalooza 1997. Why are we reviewing WrestlePalooza 1997? Well, that will probably be our first question to Dylan Gott of why of all of the library of wrestling tapes out there, are we dusting off WrestlePalooza 1997? But I think a stark contrast here, going to ECW in 97. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So that is coming up next week. In the meantime, though, folks, lots of stuff to check out. The Law from Sunday night, our whole Royal Rumble rundown, Review a Raw from Monday night, which was a packed edition of Review a Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you're listening to this show. And still to come this week, we've got the MMA report coming your way, Review an Impact. And then this Sunday on The Law, it's the return of the Roundtable, where it's going to be me joined by former WWE writers Alex Greenfield and Court Bauer together. A portion of that Roundtable will air Sunday night on The Law, chatting post-Rumble and pre-Mania. Lots of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Ting, my voice is like almost dead right now.
You sound fine to me.
I feel like I would hope that theoretically, if I had to redo Review a Raw later tonight, that my voice will last.
Oh,
but
okay.
I don't have to because it's Wednesday. Anyway, liveaudiowrestling.com, everyone. That is the destination. If you're on iTunes, you can subscribe to Live Audio Wrestling, and you could be so kind as to leave us some positive feedback. Give us some stars. Tell us how great we sound, and we give you all this free shit for free.
Yeah, we don't ask for much.
Give us some ratings. That would be very kind of you. Get us up in those rankings. Knock off some ESPN podcasts in favor of Live Audio Wrestling. Why not?
Yeah.
There are weeks that we are ahead of these folks.
Where are we right now in the iTunes ranking?
I don't know. I'd have to check.
We're usually hovering around maybe like the 40s or 50s in terms of sports audio podcasts.
Yeah.
We could do better than
Let's make WrestleMania season a big one for us.
How about top 20? Make that our
Let's do that. Let's do that.
All right.
Get us
to the top 20 of the Canadian iTunes store or whatever iTunes store.
Way, you were the The Law Royal Rumble pool winner, and I think that makes you our DJ going out here.
Oh, I win that too. Huh?
Yeah, you get to pick the song as we end the show. I think people much rather prefer your songs than my song selections. So I think, you know, when you won the pool, Way, and you were making that pose, there had to have been like a triumphant music going off in your head that symbolizes pool win for you. What would best characterize that win for you in song form?
Well, what other song do you think of when you're holding money than Fame?
Of course. Fame. That's what was going through the ears of Wei Ting on Sunday night as he held his money up. And
Fame by Irene Cara. There you go. Oh, here it is. I got it.
Fantastic. You know what? I also I wanted to announce this on Monday, but I forgot. We're going to do a contest this week, Wei.
Oh, okay.
We're doing a contest.
Another one?
Yes, another one. There, you can never have too many contests. We announced our winners for the Review Away Royal Rumble pool on Monday. Well, today, I am going to post a separate announcement with the picture of Wei Ting holding his money, and we're going to do a good old-fashioned caption contest.
Wow. Caption contest with me. I can only imagine what you guys will post.
Yes, and we'll play for something that is not money, but something good.
Okay, which is?
That sounds like a good idea.
Sure.
I got to find it. You know what? Let's pull out the old prize vault.
Let's try to announce the prize before we do the contest. Maybe people will decide whether or not they want to enter at that point. But of course, we always have great
prizes. Okay, this will be one. We'll throw in a law shirt. Okay. It's a medium-sized, so beware. It's a medium-sized, so you might have to give it to someone if you're a little hefty.
Or just lose a few pounds, or gain a few pounds.
Should we give away this?
If you no longer want to watch it, that's a big prize.
Do you think we need it?
I don't. We've already done the review.
Yeah, let's do this.
Wow, huge prize.
A law shirt and a DVD copy of The Backyard.
John Pollock's personal copy of The Backyard. You know, a lot of people enjoyed our review of that documentary. Now you get to own our copy. And if you've already seen the documentary, you probably have not seen it with audio commentary by director Paul Hoff.
Ooh.
And backyard wrestlers The Lizard and Scar.
Shit. We should have reviewed it with the commentary on.
We really should.
Oh, wow. So there you go, folks. If you're not familiar with The Backyard, go download our review. It was one of our most entertaining reviews of 2012, in my opinion. One of my favorites of all time.
I really like this documentary.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. So there you go. A medium Wah t-shirt. And we need some more shirts badly. We really need to order new shirts because we're all out. And a DVD copy of The Backyard. So probably by the time you're listening to this, an announcement will be up on the law message board, lawradio.proboards.com, and caption Wei Ting's winning mugshot with all his money that he stole, won from the law family. So that's going to wrap us up. We're going out with Fame, and next week we'll announce the winner and give you guys some fame in the form of winning the caption contest.
That's why you're the host.
I try.